Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. Today's daf has been dedicated anonymously in honor of Chalfon ben Regina Malka and Mazal Bat Esther. Today's daf has been dedicated in honor or in memory of Hacham Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning on Kufchaf Aleph, three lines from the top. First word on the line, Vesavar. Just to review yesterday's piece, we saw a machloket between Hachamim and Rabbi Yosef. If somebody has the name of God etched on his skin and he needs to go to the mikveh, so Hachamim said that when they go to the mikveh, they should take a piece of gemi, like a piece of grass, place it over the name of God and immerse in the mikveh. Whereas Rabbi Yosef said it is not necessary. And the conclusion of the Gemara was that everybody agrees if it's feasible to get a piece of gemi, everybody would agree, even the Rabbi Yosef, to get it and place it on the Shem Hashem. The machloket was if it's not feasible, if you can't get it so conveniently. Hachamim say push off the mikveh, you know, until the next night or until you can get a gemi, because they hold tevila bizmana lav mitzvahi. They hold that dipping at the first possible time is not necessarily a mitzvah to go that night. You can go the next night. So therefore, wait till you get a piece of gemi, cover the Shem Hashem so you don't immerse standing naked in front of the name of God. It's not respectable. And push off the mikveh. Whereas the B.O.C. said no. If you can't find a piece of gemi, go to the mikveh the first possible time. And just cover the Shem Hashem with your hand. Because Rabbi Yosef holds Tibila Bizmana Mitzvah. But it's a mitzvah to go to the mikveh the first possible time. Now, the way he learns that from, that she brings down, the top Rashi, Dechtiv Vaya Lifnot Erev Yirchatz B'mayim. She's just talking about some of the Stameh. So it says, once the evening comes, Yirchatz B'mayim, he should go to the mikveh. As if the Torah is telling you, not a piece of advice, but it's giving you a commandment. Once the night comes, go to the mikveh that night. Tevila bizmana mitzvah. The next that she tells us, lav mitzvah, that's the opinion of the Hachamim. V'ilo mashkach gemi ha'idana. If you can't find a piece of gemi now, lishta'eh ad l'machar. So you wait till tomorrow. Ulman de'amar lav mitzvah. And according to the opinion that says tevila is not a mitzvah at the proper time, kra etzah tova kamashmala. The pasuk is just giving you sound advice. And what's the advice? Like this. We know that if a person goes to the mikveh, he still has to wait till what's called Erev Shemesh. He has to wait until a night passes. So therefore, the Torah is giving you advice. Better to go lifnot Erev, right before the night, in order that once the night falls, so then already you'll be Taor. Because if you're going to go at night, then you're going to have to wait until the subsequent night in order to wait for Erev Shemesh. So the person is giving you advice. You try to go lifnot Erev, so you gain the extra, you know, you gain the extra day. But of course, not that you have to go at that time, according to Hachamim, because tevila bizmana lav mitzvah. So now the Gemara says, v'savar b'yoseh tevila bizmana mitzvah. The Gemara challenges this. Are you telling me that Rabbi Yosef holds that tevila in its proper time is a mitzvah? Ve'atanya, but we have a braita. And the braita says, that she tells this braita is in Masechet Yoma, in the Tosefot. It says, Hazav ve'azava. It's a man that had an emission called a zav, and or a lady that had the emission, she's called a zava. Hamsora, somebody has leprosy. Ramsorat, that's a lady with leprosy. Bo'el nida, somebody that cohabitated with a nida, which also becomes tameh. Vetameh met, or somebody that came in contact with a dead body, so he's tameh met. Tevilatam bayom. Their tevilah is in the day, meaning they have to wait 7 days, but they're allowed to go during the day, right? On the seventh day. Now, the chidush of this Tosefta is, even if their seventh day of the process falls out on Yom Kippur, even though on Yom Kippur you're not allowed to bathe, however, it is permissible to go to the mikveh. So in these cases, the seventh day of the Mitzorah, the Mitzorah, the Zav, the Zavah, the Bo'er Nida, the Tamemet, comes out on Kippur, they immerse Bayom. Okay? And the Hakamim tell us that the reason why they are allowed to dip on the seventh day is because we have a principle, Miksat Hayom Kekulo, that part of the seventh day is considered as if the whole day passed. So once already you had sunrise, so then already it's considered the seventh day is done, and therefore they're allowed to immerse. Now, what that would do for them is, as she says, that night, if they were, let's say, Kohanim, now they would be able to eat Terumah. So that mikveh does do something for them in the sense that they could dip on Kippur day, Motzae Kippur, immediately they're able to eat Terumah because they have the He'arev Shemesh. Okay, so that's that. The Tosefta continues. Nida, right, that's a lady that becomes a Nida, Viyolid, to a lady that gave birth, Tevilatan Balaila. So like these ladies, the Tevilah cannot be done in the day. The Tevilah must be done at night. That would be, let's say the seventh night falls out on Kippur. So they would go immerse on the night of Kippur. That she says, Nida v'yodid, Tovlot kedarkan. They go immerse the regular way. Belele yom kippurim. Imhal shvi'i shelahem be'erev yom kippurim. Right? If they, let's say, seventh day is Erev Kippur, so they don't go during the day. They would go Kippur night, which would be, let's say, the eighth night. That's when the Nida v'yodid go to the mikveh. We continue the Tosefta. Baal Keri, somebody that has seminal discharge, Tovel veholech kol hayom kulo. A Baal Keri can dip and dips the entire day of Kippur at any time during the day. Now why would a Baal Keri need to go to the mikveh during the day of Kippur? So that she quotes us from a Gemara Berachot that taught us that the rabbis made a Takanan institution that a Baal Keri cannot study Torah, nor can he pray, so long as he is a Baal Keri. So the Hiddush is that if a person became a Baal Keri, now he needs to pray on Kippur. So the Hiddush is he's allowed to go to the Mikveh at any time. Now any time means, according to this opinion, even after he prayed Mincha. Now, after he prays Mincha, technically, Arbit, he's allowed to pray at night. Okay? And even according to this opinion, Ni'ilah, he's also able to pray at night, according to this opinion. And therefore, technically, why would we necessitate this man to go to the mikveh on Kippur day? For what purpose? What is he gaining? Praying, he prayed everything he needs to pray. Let him go at night, and let him pray his Ni'ilah and his Kippur. Ela, with the fact that we see that the first opinion here says that a Baal Keri can go to the mikveh on Kippur at any time, even after he prayed Mincha, must be, because this opinion holds, Tevilah bizmana mitzvah, that it's a mitzvah to go to the mikveh in the proper time, and since the proper time for a Baal Keri is that day, so therefore, regardless of whether he gains anything that day, there is an inyan to go that day. So that's the opinion of Tanakama, Rabbi Yosef Omer. And here's where the contradiction is. Rabbi Yosef comes along and says, Mina Mincha ulma'ala eno tzarich litbol. He says, no, from Mincha time and up, he doesn't have to go to the mikveh. Which means, since he could pray his Arbit later, and he could pray his Ne'ilah later, so there is no real reason for him to have to go to the mikveh now. So therefore, we see the biyose must hold tevila bismana lav mitzvah. Because if it was a mitzvah to go that day, we tell him go with me regardless. So it's a contradiction on the biyose. Right, we learned above the biyose says tevila bismana mitzvah. Now you're telling me that no, that the Baal Keri on Kippur, even though that's the time to go, let him go on Motzei Kippur. Must be yours to be lav bismana, lav mitzvah. Let's see Rashi together. Rabbi Yosef min haul ma'ala. Im la'a keri la'har shit palitvat mincha. Let's say he saw keri, he had a discharge after he prayed mincha on Kippur. Share hu yachol lamtin ad shetachshach. Let him go to the mikveh after he gets dark. V'yitbol, he'll dip. V'yitbol tefilat arbit u'tefilat ne'ila nameh. And even tefilat ne'ila, svira lesh yachol palel balayla. He holds that he could pray also tefilat ne'ila balayla. So therefore, en tzarich letbol beyom mishum zman tefilat delav mitzvah letbilav mitzvah. So therefore, you see Rabbi Yosef obviously hold tefilat mitzvah lav mitzvah. The fact that he's pushing it off until the night, that's a contradiction on what we learned. So comes the Gemara and says, no, that's a different Rabbi Yosef. Gemara says, Hahi Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Yehudahi. It's a different Rabbi Yosef. Really, our Rabbi Yosef holds tevilat bizmana mitzvah. That Tosefta and Yom Kippurim, that's talking about Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Yehuda. Now how do we know? The Amar daya tevilah ba'achadona. The famous case in Masechet Nida. Literally the words mean daya. It's enough for her tevilah acharona, her last tevilah. I'll explain you the case. There was a lady and she was pregnant and she had a miscarriage. And she does not know exactly when it happened, and she also does not know what it was, a boy or a girl, and she also doesn't know at the time that she gave birth, was she a zava? Now I'll explain to you all the ramifications. If a lady gives birth to a boy, so she is teme'ah for 7 days, then she goes to the mikveh. If she gives birth to a girl, she's teme'ah 14 days, then she goes to the mikveh. If she's a zava when she gives birth, so then already after her 7 for a boy or 14 for a girl, she must wait 7 clean days in order to clean herself from the zava. So technically this lady over here who doesn't know exactly what it was and when it happened, therefore there are 4 possible times technically that she has to be concerned about. She has to be concerned about zachar, nekeba, the 7 and the 14, and then she has to be concerned about the zava, meaning 7 after the 7, 7 clean days after the 7, and 7 clean days after the 14. Now, the Gemara there in Nida says in order to alleviate all sefekot of what day she has to go to the mikveh, because since she doesn't know exactly when all this happened, so the Gemara comes out that she has to dip 35 times. And the Gemara there explains how each day is a possible time where she'd be obligated to go to the mikveh. And since that Tanan Masichri Da says Tevila Bizmana Mitzvah, so any potential day that she would possibly have to go to the mikveh, she's got to go. So it comes out there's 35 different Tevilot. Came Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda over there and said she only has to go once. At the end, meaning the last possible time that she has to go, let her dip once. Meaning, after the 14 days of, let's say, Nekeva, and 7 days, clean days, after that, meaning after 21 days, that's the maximum that she could be, Teme'ah. So then we'll let her go once after the 21 days, and she's okay. Obviously, the B.O.C.B. with their host, Tevilah Bizmana, Lav Mitzvah. That's why he's allowing her just to go once. So that Shita of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is the same rabbi over here that says that if a person became a Baal Keri on Kippur from Minha time and up, wait, go after Kippur. And Rabbi Yosef, regular Rabbi Yosef, he's the opinion that we had by us, that said that if the person cannot find a gemi, let them go to the mikveh immediately, just by covering with the hair, because Rabbi Yosef plain holds tevila bezmana mitzvah. So that's how we reconcile it. Comes the Mishnah. Nochri sheba lechabot. Now we discuss, if there's a fire in a house on Shabbat and a goy wants to come and extinguish it, right? The goy wants to extinguish the fire. En omrim lo kabeh. Certainly we cannot tell him directly, extinguish. Ve'al techabeh. But you also don't have to stop him by telling him, don't extinguish. Mipnei she'en shevitato alehen. Because we are not obligated to stop the goyim from doing melacha on Shabbat. Unless he's our servant, then it's another story. But a regular Gentile that on his own goes and now wants to put out the fire, you don't have to stop him by saying, al techabeh. But again, you cannot tell him as well, kabeh. You cannot tell him, go and extinguish it. Aval, katan sheba lechabot, but a minor, let's say a child, let's say less than bar mitzvah, that wants to come and extinguish the fire, en shumeim lo. In that case over there, we don't listen to him, meaning you have to stop him. Mepeneh sheshvitato alehen, because it's our obligation to make sure that he does not do melacha on Shabbat. So how is the difference between a katan and a nochri? Now, the reason that she tells us why you cannot tell the goy kabeh, it would be isur de rabbanan. The rabbis instituted what's called amira le nochri shevut, that telling a goy to do something for you on Shabbat, even though biblically it would be permitted, but Hakamim said it's going to be asur. That's why it would be forbidden to tell the goy kabeh, because of the din of amira le nochri. Comes the Gemara. Amar Ami bedeleka hetiru lomar kol mechabeh enu mafsid. The rabbis had a leniency when it comes to a fire, that the fellow is allowed to say anybody that extinguishes will not lose. Well, you can't directly tell the goy extinguish, but you can hint to it, like, and you can say whoever's going to extinguish over here is not going to lose, meaning that you'll compensate him for his work after Shabbat. So that's permissible to say. So comes the Gemara and says, Nema misayale. Let us bring a proof to this opinion from our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? Nochri sheba lechabot, if the goy came to extinguish. En omrim lo kabeh. We do not tell him to extinguish. Ve'al techabeh, nor do we have to stop him. Ve'pteh she'en shvitato alehem. So the Gemara now makes a diyuk. Kabeh hu de'lo amrinan leh. Like, you can't tell him directly, extinguish. But you can hint him by saying that anybody that extinguishes will not lose. So therefore the Gemara wants to bring a proof to this from our Mishnah. The only thing that the Mishnah forbade was what? Direct. Kabeh. However, implying if you just tell the guy, or you just say, anybody that extinguishes will not lose, that'll be okay. So that's a proof in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, wait, no proof. Ema sefa. I'll bring you a question from the end of the Mishnah. Al techabeh lo amrinan le. Which means, we said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed, that you don't have to stop the goy, right, from extinguishing. Which means if he went on his own and he's extinguishing, you don't have to say al techabeh. So the Gemara says, v'chol amechabeh enu mafsid nameh lo amrinan le. Which means, we'll say that you don't have to stop the guy. Which means you don't have to say, al techabeh. But maybe you're not going to be allowed to say, kol hamechabeh eno mafsid. Because maybe that's a little more direct. Which is, the only thing the Mishnah is telling you, don't say is what? If the guy went on his own, keep quiet. You don't have to tell him, stop. But maybe, only because you don't open your mouth. But to tell him, anybody that is mechabeh is not going to lose, maybe that's too much. Maybe the only heter of the Mishnah is to keep quiet. But who says that you'd be allowed to actually hint? So really the Mishnah, its implications are contradictory. From the first part of the Mishnah, it sounds like you're not allowed to tell him extinguish, implying that you could hint. From the second part of the Mishnah, it's mashal, the only thing you could do is keep quiet. Hinting would be forbidden. So the Gemara says, Ela meha leka lemishma mina. Meaning, from the Mishnah, you can't imply anything. Because obviously the Mishnah wanted to teach us something, but the Mishnah, the implications are contradictory. So we don't know which one is the real implication and which one is not the real one. Therefore, leave our Mishnah. Mishnah cannot serve as a proof for this point. Tanu Rabbanan. Ma'aseh v'nafla deleka b'chasero shel Yosef ben Sima'eh b'shichin. There was one time a fire that broke out into the courtyard of Yosef ben Sima'i in the village of Shichin. Ubao anshe gistera shel Sipuri lechabot. And the shilton, the authorities, gistera, the authorities of Sipuri came to extinguish the fire. Now obviously this was on Shabbat, and the goyim, the authorities came to put out the fire. Why? Because this Yosef ben Sima'i was the treasurer of the king. And therefore he was an important man. So when they heard that his house was on fire, they went and they dispatched the firemen. But he did not allow them. He stopped them because of Kabod Shabbat. And a miracle happened to him. And it started to rain, and the rain put out the fire. La'erev, at night, shiger lekol ehad mehen shtei sila'in. So Yosef ben Sima'i, out of gratitude to the firemen that came to put out the fire, so he sent to each one two sila'in, two coins. Ul aparchos shebahem, and to the, let's say, the manager, or the chief of the firemen, Hamishim, he said 50 coins. He got out of gratitude. Ukshishamu hachamim bedavar. When the rabbis heard of this episode, Amru, they said, Lohayat sarich lekach. He didn't have to do this, which means he didn't have to stop them from extinguishing the fire. Why? Sharesh shanin, because we learned in our Mishnah. Nochri sheba lechabot. En omrim lo kabe, ve'al techabe. If the goy comes and take me out the fire, just keep quiet. Well, you can't tell him to extinguish, but you don't have to tell him, al techabe. So technically Yosef ben Sima'i was ma'mir on himself, but really he could have just allowed them to put out the fire based on the rule of the Mishnah. Mishnah continues, aval katan sheba lechabot. But if a minor comes out to extinguish, en shomeim lo. Right? We don't listen to meaning, we have to stop them. Because it's incumbent upon us to stop the ketanim in order to keep the Shabbat. So comes the Gemara and says, Shmat mina, we could learn from here, katan ochel nevelot, that if a katan is sitting down eating things that are not kosher, for example, he's eating nevelot, beddin mitzuvin alav lafrisho. So Beit Din has the obligation to stop him, which means we have a mahloket that she tells us in Masechet Yevamot. Do you have to stop a katan from Isur or not? The Gemara over there quotes an opinion of Rabbi Yohanan based on a story that happened. That she tells us the story on the first wide line. The first wide line in Nashi, V'tikshil Rabbi Yohanan, D'amar b'yibamot, L'rabab al-barchana, D'irkesu le'mafteichot shel Beit HaMidrash b'rishut Rabbim. Rabab al-barchana forgot his keys on Shabbat in the public domain. Now he needed to get the keys back to his, to the private domain. How is he going to get the keys? So it says b'Shabbat. Dabar tala v'talita, so he told a child, a boy and a girl, children, l'tayle hatam, go play over there. The imashkechelehu maitelehu. So he engineered a situation where he told some children, go play over there where the keys were, And he figured, what's going to happen? The kids will see the keys, they'll find the keys, they'll pick them up, and they'll go bring them back to him. So what do you see over here? That you don't have to stop the kids from Isur Shabbat. So therefore, it's a question, what we're learning now. The Gemara says it's against what we're learning in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is teaching us what? That you cannot let them put out the fire. That teaches us what? What we learned in Masechet Yebamot, the opinion is that if a katan, let's say, is doing an isur, for example, eating nevelot, you have to stop him. So that's a question on the Yohanan that said, no, go tell the kids to play over there and they'll bring the keys back. What do you mean? You have to stop them. So that's the Gemara's question. Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Gemara says, no, this case is different. Bekatana oseh ledaat aviv. Here it's different. Here the child is doing it for the father. Meaning, let's say a case where the father's house is on fire, right? So the father ascertains that when he sees the child go put out the fire, he knows that the kid is doing it specifically for the father. And therefore, that's going to be asur. Which means, where did we say it's permissible? When the kid's doing it on his own. The kid's doing it on his own since he's a minor. We don't have to stop them. For example, in the case of the keys, when those kids were just bringing back the keys, they had no idea that it's going to benefit a specific person or not. They just think they'll see the keys, they'll bring it back with them. That's permissible. However, even if Yohanan will agree, if they're doing it for a specific person, you cannot let a katan do something for a gadol that is isur, specifically on Shabbat. So therefore, he said, this case is different. So the Gemara says, "Utkivatega ben Nochri de Ka'avid de Darte di Israel mishare." So the Gemara is right. Similarly, then it should be forbidden for the goy, because when the goy is putting out the fire, he's also doing it for the Yisrael. If a goy does a melacha for a Yisrael, is that going to be permissible? So the Gemara says, "Nochri le Darte de Nafshe Habid." The goy is doing it for himself. Meaning the goy knows that he's going to be compensated after Shabbat. And therefore when he puts out the fire, he's not doing it for the Jew, he's doing it for himself. And therefore there's a difference. The katan that puts out the fire, he wants to save his father's house. So therefore if he's doing it for that purpose, in the chenameh would be asur even according to Rabbi Yohanan. When did Rabbi Yohanan say it's okay for a katan? That's when he's doing it alone. Meaning if he's eating nevelot alone, Betty doesn't have to stop him because he's not doing it for anybody. In this case over here, where he told him to go play by the keys, they're doing it for themselves. However, now Mishnah, the reason why it was asur, because he was doing it ledat aviv. The Tosafot, on the bottom Tosafot, says that you have to explain how Mishnah either going like Rabbi Yehuda, that says melacha she'en asericha legufa is hayav, because here when you're putting out the fire, it's really isud rabbanan if you think about it, because if you say it's a melacha she'en asericha legufa, so you don't need the coals, so therefore extinguishing technically is isud rabbanan. The only way you can make it isud deoraita is either going according to Rabbi Yehuda, that says the melacha shena tzidika gufa is chayav, or according to Rabbi Shimon, that says melacha shena tzidika gufa patur, you could say it's talking about a case where you need the coals over here. Why? So therefore, the Tosfot wants to establish the case of the Mishnah is it's Yisud Deoraita, like putting out this fire. Again, either it's like Rabbi Yehuda, that says melacha shena tzidika gufa chayav, or according to Rabbi Shimon, that says melacha shena tzidika gufa patur, but this is a case where you're talking about where you want to use the coals of the house that is burning. So it also will be Yisud Doraita. Why does Tosfot want to establish that the case of the Mishnah is Yisud Doraita? Because he says that the end, I'll recall you his words, the end bedin mitzvin nafrisho, that if it was Yisud Rabbanan, then everybody would agree bedin does not have to stop the katan. The only time you have to stop a katan is when there's an Yisud Doraita taking place. So therefore he has to establish the whole discussion about Mishnah where it's talking about a Isur Doraita. But everybody would agree in Isur Rabbanan, you do not have to stop the Katan. Furthermore, Tosfot says we must be talking about a child that did not reach the age of Hinuch. But once the child reaches the age of Hinuch, then of course you have to train them not to do any Isur, and you cannot allow them to do anything. Of course you have to stop them. Comes the next Mishnah. kofin ke'ara al gabe haner b'shvir shelo te'echoz bekora. First case. On Shabbat, you're allowed to take a ke'ara. Rashi says it's talking about a ke'ara of cheres, an earthenware pot, and you're able to cover the ner, cover the flame on Shabbat, in order that it doesn't take hold to the beam. You have a beam, let's say, on top of the house, and you're worried that the flame is going to burn the beams. So we learned this case earlier. You're allowed to take a earthenware keli and cover the fire, of course, in a way where you're not going to extinguish it. Hadush of the Mishnah, even though the beam is mukseh, and we learned early in the Masechet that according to some opinions, you're not allowed to take something permissible in order to serve a mukseh item, and therefore taking this earthenware keli, you're taking it in order to serve the beam, which is mukseh, to save the beam. So the Hadush of the Mishnah is, either we don't go like that opinion, that we say it's permissible, right? That here we're saying you're allowed to take an earthenware keli to cover the flame in order to protect the beam. So obviously we don't go with this principle that says you can't move a permissible item for a mukseh item. Now, even according to that opinion, they can explain the Mishnah. The Rashi tells us that that opinion was Rav Yitzchak on Daf Mem Gimel. The way you'll interpret this Mishnah is that you needed to take this keli for a different purpose. For example, let's say you needed to move this earthenware keli in the Tzorech Mekomo. You needed its place. Once you picked it up already, Beheter, now Rabbi Yitzhak will tell you you could put it wherever you want. You could even put it in the or over the flame, which is Rabbi Yitzhak will not allow you to pick up the keli to put it on the flame to protect the beam. But we're talking about a case of here, according to Rabbi Yitzhak, where you picked it up, Beheter. You needed it for Tzorech Mekomo. And that's why it allows you to move it and put it anyway, once it's in your hand already, so technically you can move it wherever you want. Now, Rashi went out of his way to tell us that we're only talking about an earthenware dish. Why? So the Mefarshim explained, because if it was a metal dish, so then already by placing it over the fire, you're going to cause it to get red hot until it glows, and that would be in the suit of Havara. So it would be forbidden to put a metal keli over a fire because of the isud of mavir. That's why he only discussed a keli hayres. That's the first din of the Mishnah. Second din, the al su'ah shel katan. Furthermore, one is able on Shabbat to cover the su'ah of katan, the feces of a katan, of a child. One wants to cover it with a keli, that would be permissible. The al akrab shelo tishach. One would be permissible to cover an akrab. Akrab is to say a scorpion, in order that it doesn't bite, so one can cover it with a keli. Now, the question you have to say over here is, what's the heter? Seemingly you are trapping. So either you have to say that it's a melacha she'en asiricha legufa, because you don't need the scorpion. So since it's a melacha she'en asiricha legufa, according to the Bishimon at least, it'll be only isud rabbanan. And in a case where it poses a danger, so the rabbis did not gozer. Or you could say that scorpions are not from the species that are normally trapped, and therefore en b'minon nitzod, and therefore it's yisud rabbanan as well, and therefore the rabbis did not impose that stringency when it comes to an akrab, which is dangerous. Okay, so that's the case of the akrab. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, Maaseh ba lefnei Rabbi Yohanan ben Zakkai be'Arav. Rabbi Yohanan ben Zakkai lived in the city of Arav. So this case came to him where they went on Shabbat and they covered the akrav, right, with a keli. Ve'amar, and he said, Choshishani lo mehatat. He says, I suspect that it's possible that they transgressed a hatat. Now, the question is, why? So let's look at the bottom, Nashi. Hosheshani lo mehatat, kevan de lo haya akrav latz aharav. Since the akrav really wasn't posing a threat, meaning it wasn't chasing them, eni yodeim hayav mishum seda im lav. So I don't know if they're really hayav or not. What was his question? Well, could be he holds melachash she'ena sidicha l'gubah is hayav. And therefore, if you hold melachash she'ena sidicha l'gubah hayav, so could be they're going to be hayav hatat. He says, but he was choshesh because could be maybe this item is really not normally trapped and therefore maybe you're not chayav. So when they asked the Biyochanan the question, he said, I don't know, I suspect that it's possible that a hayuf chatat was transgressed. Whereas Tana Kama clearly held mutar. Because clearly either they held the melacha shena sinichal gufa is patur, or they held en bemino nitzod is only yisud rabbanan, therefore in this case Hakamim waived it. Obviously the Yohanan must have held melacha shena sinichal gufa is hayav. And therefore he said, well, hosheshani mechatat could be by covering that akram on Shabbat, they transgressed a fayuv hatat. Comes the Gemara and says, Rav Yehuda v'Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba v'Rav Hanan bar Rava, the three rabbis, ikli'u lebe Avin demin nashike. They found themselves in the house of Avin from Nashike. L'Rav Yehuda v'Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, the first two rabbis, aitu lehu folaita. He gave them to sit on a couch. Rav Hanan bar Rava lo aitule. But Rav Hanan bar Rava, he did not give them to sit on the couch. So he sat on the floor, the rabbi. Ashkeche, so Rav Hanan that was sitting on the floor, he found that matne le livre, that the host, meaning Avin, was teaching his son the following Mishnah. Ve'al tzu'ah shel katan mepene katan. He taught his son that it is permissible on Shabbat to cover the feces of a katan mepene katan, in order that the katan will not come and play with it and soil himself. So you can take a keli and cover the feces of a katan. He was teaching the Mishnah to his son. So Rav Hanan says, Amar le, Avin shatia matne shetuta libne. Literally means the foolish Avin is teaching a foolish statement to his son. Now, of course, obviously he was a little upset because he put him on the floor. So therefore this was his way to dig him a little by calling him, you know, a shoteh. But obviously he also did not agree with what he was teaching. He heard him telling his son that it's permissible to cover the feces of a katan on Shabbat because of the katan. So he says, the foolish Avin is teaching something foolish to his son. Why? He said, what are you talking about? This feces of the katan is not mukseh. Why? Because you can give it to the dogs. I mean, the dogs eat the feces of a katan. And therefore, why is it mukseh? What are you telling me that you only have to cover it? Technically, if you want, you can actually move it away. It's not mukseh. And if you're going to ask me, delo chazyala me'itmol, maybe you're going to tell me, yeah, but going into Shabbat, this wasn't here. And therefore, you have a problem of nolad, which means this should be mukseh, because before Shabbat, the feces weren't here. Now they were born on Shabbat, so to speak. So therefore, it should be mukseh. Maybe you'll ask that on me. So he says, "Ve'at tanya," but didn't we learn in the Braita? Ne'arot, the rivers, hamoshchim that are flowing, u'ma'yanot hanobe'in, and the wellsprings that are also sprouting, let's say, or flowing also, haren keragle kol adam. They have the status of the feet of all people. Meaning like this, we have a law on Shabbat. You're not allowed to benefit from something that came out of the tomb of Shabbat. That came out of the, let's say, 2,000 amot that a person is allowed to walk on Shabbat. So now let's say a person is by a river, right? So now there's water that is flowing down the river. He wants to drink from the river. Now, that water probably was 2,000 amot away before Shabbat. So how can he drink from it? So the Hiddush is, since it's always moving, and since everybody knows that this water is going to be in one place and then move to a different place in the course of Shabbat, so therefore it is permissible, no matter where the person is, It starts wherever you are, which means you don't go where the water emanated from. You go where the guy picks up the water, and therefore, because you knew the water is going to get there, so therefore it's permissible. So he was trying to say the same similar. Since everybody knows the katan is going to have the feces on Shabbat, which means every day the child does relieve himself. So therefore, it's as if you knew that they're going to be here. Therefore, it should not be considered mukseh because of the fact that you can give these feces to the kelavim. So he's telling him, what are you telling your kid that he has to cover it? Why does he have to cover it? He could actually move it. So it says, ve'ela hechi itnia. Oh, so he asked the back, but we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah said that tso'ah of ketanim, you have to cover it. So what are you talking? He says, I'm just quoting a Mishnah. So he says, no, you read the Mishnah wrong. Ema al tso'ah shel tanegolim mipnei katan. Which is when it said you're allowed to move tso'ah mipnei katan, it meant the feces of a chicken you're allowed to cover in order that the katan does not soil himself. Now it seems that obviously the feces of a chicken is not edible to a dog, and therefore it's mukseh, and therefore the hadush of the Mishnah is that you're allowed to cover it with a keli. But the feces of a katan, you'd be allowed to move it as well. So Gemara says, even on the feces of a chicken, it still should be permissible to move, because we have a law of graf shalei, something that, and literally graf shalei is a bucket filled with rei, with feces. So since this is a disgusting thing, the Hachamim waved mukseh in order that you can handle it to get rid of it. So then when we see something that's disgusting, you're allowed to move it. There's no mukseh. So true, maybe this tso'ah shel tanegolim is not worthy for kelabim, but it is disgusting. Give it a status of a graf shel rei, and therefore it should be permissible to move it. So he says, "V'chi tema graf shel rei agad mana'in ihu gufala." Maybe you'll tell me, no, only the heter of a graf shel rei is only because it's in a vessel. You're not directly moving it. You're moving the rei in a bucket, but to move it directly, no. Maybe that's your argument. V'ha ha'hu achbar. There was one time a mouse. The ishtakah the ispalmaked Rav Asher. It was found in the besamim of Rav Asher. It seems he had, like, say, a bottle of besamim, and he found a dead mouse in the bottle. The amarlu, so he said to his students, nekotu betzutzita, take it by its tail, the afkuha, and throw it out. So you see what a dead mouse is like, a graf shel rei. It's disgusting. So you saw that the rabbi allowed him to handle it directly. He didn't care that he's handling it directly. So you see what? That a graf shel rei is permissible to handle directly. So then back to the question. Why did you say that you have to cover it? You should be able to actually just pick it up and move it. The tso'ah shel tanegolim. So the Gemara says, Be'ashpa. It's talking about where you found it in the garbage dump. So therefore, there's no din of graf shel rei in the garbage dump, because that's where it belongs. So therefore, if you found it in the garbage, and you just don't want the katan to play with it in the garbage, so therefore you just have to cover it. You can't move a graf shel rei only in a place where it doesn't belong, but it belongs there. So the Gemara says, wait, the katan be'ashpa, my ba'ile. What are you talking about? What's a katan doing in the garbage dump? You tell me that you could cover it so the kid's not going to play with it. Is the kid normally found in a garbage dump? So the Gemara says, no. Be'hatzer. We're talking about where it was in the courtyard. So the Gemara says, hold it. If it's in the courtyard, Hatzer name graf shel rei. We're back to the question. If it's in the Hatzer, so it's a graf shel rei. You should be able to move it directly. So the Gemara's answer, Be'ashpash be'hatzer. It's in the garbage of the Hatzer. What do you gain? First of all, it is mukseh because it's in the garbage dump. However, there's kids there because it's in the garbage dump that's in the courtyard. Nahatzer. So therefore, the chidush of the Mishnah is if it's a so'ah shel tanegolim, you can cover it with a keli, but you cannot actually move it. Comes again when it continues. Ba'al akrav shelo tishach. You'll have to cover a akrav, which would be the scorpion, in order that it does not bite. Right? Comes again when it says, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Kol Maziki Neheragin B'Shabbat. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi teaches us a klal here. all things that potentially damage, it is permissible to kill them on Shabbat. Now Rashi tells us, at this point we're assuming even if they're not chasing the person. Even though, let's say, you have a dangerous type of species, it's not chasing them. He says you can go out of your way and just kill it. Be, kill it even. Even though killing is one of the melachot, to be shohet, still he says permissible. Now, the reason that she tells us is because he holds that the melachash en asinicha legufa. I don't need the carcass of this dead rodent that I'm killing. So therefore, if you hold melachat in the chalig gufa is patur according to the Mishimon, so it's only assumed the Rabbanan. In the case of potential danger, the rabbis waive their isud the Rabbanan. So that's the Yeshua Shita again. Mutar to kill all potential mazikin, things that damage on Shabbat. Okay, let's read that inside. Amar Yeshua Menevi. Kol mazikin, anything that can cause damage, deheragin b'Shabbat. You can kill them on Shabbat. Mativ Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef brought a question from a brayta. Hamisha neheragin b'Shabbat. There's only five species that you're allowed to kill on Shabbat. Ve'eluhen, and these are them. Zvuv shebe'eres Mitzrayim. That's the fly that comes from Egypt. Vitzra'a shebe Nineveh. The hornet that comes from the city of Nineveh. Ve'akrav shebe Hadyab, the scorpion from the place called Hadyab. Ve'nahas shebe Eretz Yisrael, the snake from Israel. Ve'kelev shote bechol makom, and a wild dog in any place. So you see clearly the Gemara is telling you there's only five that you're allowed to kill, and mashma everything else. No. Now the Gemara analyzes. Mani, who's the author of this braita? Ilimar biyuda. If you want to tell me it's a biyuda, ha amar melachash en asinicha legufa hayav ale, which means since he holds it's hayav because it's melachash en asinicha, I mean you don't need the dead animal, so at most it'll be a melachash en asinicha legufa. But he holds hayav; he's not going to allow you to commit a biblical transgression in order to kill these animals. Ela la Rabbi Shimon, must be his found the opinion of the Bishimon that says melachash en asinicha legufa patur. Ve'hani hu deshari, and he's only allowing you to kill these five. Acharini la, but all others no. So how did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi come along in the name of Rabbi Shimon and say you could kill any animal that's mazik? Adrava, we see according to Rabbi Shimon you can only kill the five. That's the contradiction. So comes the Gemara and says Amar Yirmiya Uman Nemalan De'am Mitad Etztahi. That Rabbi Yirmiya comes along and says, you're bringing me this braita. Rabbi Yosef, you're bringing me this braita that says you can only kill five. Who told you that this braita is mitaritzta? Who told you it's a justified braita? Which means not all braitot are accepted. Normally a braita to be accepted has to come from the yeshiva of Rav Hiya or Rav Oshaya. They were the they were the ones that had the authentic braitot. This braita is being quoted by Rav Yosef. So comes the Gemara and says, you're asking me a question on this braita. Who told you it's metaritzta? Who told you it's even a correct braita? Dilma mishabeshtahi. Maybe it's a shibush. Maybe it's a mistake, the whole braita. I mean, you create a braita. You ask a question from it. Who even said this braita is legitimate? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef comes along and defends himself and says, Ana matnina la. I have this braita, which means this braita is legal. I have the tradition on this braita. Ve'otivna la. And therefore I asked from this braita to Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Ve'ana mitaritzna la. And you know what? I'm going to answer the contradiction also. So he says, don't tell me that this braita is shibush, and therefore I can't ask questions. I brought the braita, I asked from the braita, and I'm going to answer the contradiction from the braita. And what's the answer? So he says, Biratsu aharav v'devre akol, which means when they're running after him, and according to everybody. What does that mean? So the Mefarshim explained the answer as follows. That what it says, the five, you're allowed to kill, that's talking about even when they're not running after them, where they're just on site, according to everybody, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd be allowed to kill them. Why? Because these five are dangerous. And therefore it's sakana, and that's why they allow you to kill the five, even if they're not running. Now, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, that said, any mazik you're allowed to kill, he's talking about what? Where they are chasing him. Any mazik that is chasing, so then it would be permissible to kill them. Now, that would only be going according to Rabbi Shimon, that says the melacha shena sidicha legufa is patur. And therefore, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, who's following that opinion, will say, only since they're running after him, and anyway, it's only Isur the Rabbanan, even though it's not one of the five, you know, major dangerous ones, it'll be permissible. But the five, even if they're not running, according to everybody, you can't kill us. That's the way Rabbi Yosef answers the contradiction. Comes again what it says. Tani Tana Kameh de Rava Baravuna. They brought a brayta in front of Rava Baravuna. Ha'oreg mihashim v'akalimim b'Shabbat. If somebody kills snakes and scorpions on Shabbat, en ruah hasidim nuhahemenu. The hasidim, the very, very pious people called hasidim, they're not happy with those people. They're not happy with those people that kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbat. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar le. So Rava Baravuna, when he heard this statement, he said, Ve'otan hasidim. These hasidim that are mahmir, and they're upset by the people that are killing the snakes and scorpions, En ruah hachamim nuhamehem. The rabbis are not happy with them. Which means the rabbis hold, you can kill the snakes and scorpions. Which means the Hasidim themselves, when they would see somebody killing a scorpion on Shabbat or a snake, they wouldn't be happy. They would say, haram, it's not not proper. So Rabbi Baravuna says, yeah, we're not happy with their attitude. Which means, he held Rabbi Baravuna, obviously, it's permissible on Shabbat to kill the snakes and the scorpions. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, he writes over here, "De'i lo mazikin hashta sofan lazik b'shat ka'asam." That she tells you, even if they're not running after you, meaning even though they might not be damaging you now, but eventually they're going to get angry and they're going to damage. So therefore, according to Rabbi Baravuna, it's mashma that you're allowed to kill any, let's say, the snake and the scorpion, even on sight. Because what? Even though right now, let's say, they're not dangerous, but they're going to be dangerous. That's Rabbi Baravuna's opinion. Ufliga de Ravuna. However, Rabbi Baravuna is arguing on his father, Ravuna. Why? De Ravuna chazya lahu gavra deka katil zibura. He saw, Ravuna saw a fellow on Shabbat that was killing a zibura, a certain wasp or a bee. Amar le, so he told him, Shalamtinu lekulu? What, now you got rid of all of them? Which is what you think is the last bee in the world? You didn't kill them all. You didn't get rid of the problem. So therefore, obviously, he held, in these cases over here, you're not allowed to go and kill. They weren't posing any direct threat. And they went and killed it. So therefore, you see, we have a machluk between Rabba, Ravuna, and Ravuna. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Braita. Braita says, let's say a person met up with snakes and scorpions, right? They were going after him. Hargan, and he went and he killed them. Not only on Shabbat, but for that matter, any time during the week. So the Gemara says, if that's the way God made it, that these snakes and scorpions will be killed by you, you have to know that God obviously sent them to you in order to be killed. That she explains, Lachen ba'u liyado. That's why they came to you. Shizimen lo ha'makom la'abedan, lefi shayu atidot lazik. which means these animals eventually were going to damage. So God gave you the zechut in order to kill them to save the people from damages. That's the way we have to look at it. Now, lo hargan, if let's say you didn't have the opportunity to kill them, biyadua shinizdamnu lehorgo, then you have to know that these snakes and scorpions were actually coming after the person to kill him. And he's lucky, a miracle from Shamayim happened that he got saved, because he didn't kill them. So therefore, you have to know that God saved you miraculously. Amar Ola Betim Rabbah Hana Amar Rabbi Yohanan Benishufin Bo. So only talking about where they're hissing, which means only where the snake is hissing, then you know he's angry, and therefore he wants to kill. Then you say that if you killed it, you had the zechut, or if you didn't kill it, then you have to say that a miracle happened to you. Because when they're hissing, then you know they're in a bad mood and that's what they want to kill. But if just you saw a snake and you didn't kill it, does not necessarily mean that you were in danger. Amar of Abba Barkana, story. One time there was a snake that fell in the Beit HaMidrash. Ve'amad nivati ehad, a certain fellow from the from a city called Nevayot. So they call him this Nivati Ahad, this fellow from Nevayot, he rose, Ve'argo, and he went and he killed the snake. Amar Rabbi, so Rabbi came along and said, Pagabo Kayotsebo. Somebody that's similar to it killed it. Now we don't know if he meant that complimentary or not. So the Gemara asks, Ibayadu, Pagabo Kayotsebo Teshapir Abid, which means, is he saying that he did good? Which means that it was proper for him to do it, which means he was saying that the Nahash was Rodef, and therefore somebody that's like the snake that's Rodef it went and killed it, which he was justified. So just like the snake was chasing, so another chaser like it went and killed it, and chased it away. That would be a good thing. Or, lo. Or maybe he was saying, like, this guy's like a snake. Just like a snake is dangerous, so another dangerous, sly guy killed something that's similar to him. So the Gemara says, Tashema. Rav Abba b'Ned Rav Chaya bar Abba v'Rabbi Zera havu yatve akil'a debe Rabbi Yanai. These rabbis were sitting on the porch of Rabbi Yanai. Nafak milta mebenayu. So now a subject came amongst them, Divrei Torah. Ba'u minem Rabbi Yanai. They asked the question to Rabbi Yanai. Ma'u la'arog nechashim v'akramim b'Shabbat. What's the deen? Could you kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbat? Amar lehu tzra'a nihoreg. He says, I even kill hornets. Nahaz ve'akrav, local chicken. All the more so you can kill snakes and scorpions. If he kills even hornets, all the more so you can kill snakes and scorpions. So that answers our question. Obviously, when the rabbi said over there, he killed somebody like him, he was complimenting him. He was saying, yeah, of course you can kill the snakes and scorpions on Shabbat, because they are dangerous. From the fact that you see that Bianai came along and said he even kills hornets, or the more so he kills snakes and scorpions. So give us no proof. Dilma lefitumo. Maybe he was only allowing to kill the snakes on Shabbat, lefitumo, meaning as he's walking. Which is, if he's just walking and there happens to be a snake on the way, he doesn't have to move his strides. He's able to continue to walk and crush the snake. That's only because he's walking already normally. However, who said you can go out of your way but kavanah and kill it? Maybe that's what the rabbi was saying, Rabbi Yanai. Maybe Rabbi Yanai was just saying, yeah, I kill, all of us I would kill snakes, meaning through my normal walking. As she said, look at that, she four lines in the bottom. Dilma lefitumo. No, they're not chasing him. But the rabbi, they're not chasing him. Dilma lefitumo. Lo shiachamod alav yargiru lehedya. Not that he should go purposely and go kill it. Ela kishu olech letumo. He's walking, regularly. Then ahashu akab befanav. And now he sees a snake and scorpion in front of him. En sadik lishamet memenu. He doesn't have to sidestep it. Ela dorcho veolech. He continue walking straight. Ve'im met bedrichato. Yamut. Let him die.
Why?
He didn't have kavanah to kill. He just keeps on walking straight.
The davar she'en mitkaven Rabbi Yehuda mitrabananu,
which is even according to Rabbi Yehuda that says davar she'en mitkaven is asur. It's only asur mitrabanan. And in this case over of a dangerous creature, Rabbi Yehuda will say the rabbis didn't even make a gezerah. He's not mitkaven out of his way to kill. He's walking. So the chiddush, you can continue walking even though you're going to tread on the snake.
So the Gemara says, the Amar of Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda taught, this is Rabbi Yehuda the Amora, rok dorso lefitumo.
Person's walking in the saliva on the floor. You can continue walking over the saliva, even though now you're going to embed the saliva in the ground, and you might fill a hole by stepping on the saliva, because you're smoothing out the saliva, and now you're filling a hole in the ground. That's considered boneh.
Doesn't matter. Ve'amar av sheshat nahash dorso lefitumo. And Rav Sheshat told you can do the same thing by a snake.
So therefore, all these rabbis are saying the only way you can kill them on Shabbat is if you're just walking your normal way and you happen to step on them, then it's permissible.
Abba Bar Marta. There was a rabbi called Abba Bar Marta. Dehu Abba Bar Min Yomeh, which is also Abba Bar Min Yomeh. Hava Maske Be Debe Resh Geluta Zuze.
He owed the Resh Galut, the exilarch, money.
Aituhu,
so they brought him in front of them on Shabbat.
Kam mitzar ale,
and they caused them tzar. Yes, they wanted their money. Not that the exilarch was actually going to take the money on Shabbat, but they were harassing him in order that eventually he will pay them.
Hava shade ruka.
So there was some spittle that was on the ground in front of them.
Amalu resh galuta. So the resh galut said, "Aitu mana, bring a vessel, sahifu alave,
and cover it." Obviously, they held that it's mukseh. So therefore, they just said, "You know, just take a keli and just cover it."
Amalu lo tzarichu,
you don't have to do that, achi. You don't have to do that.
Amar Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda taught, "Rok dorso nefitumo."
You can leave it on the floor and just casually walk from one place to another. And as you're walking, you'll step on it, and it was permissible. So long as you're walking in that area, it doesn't matter if you step on it. Which is, he taught the Resh Galut halakha that you're allowed to do it. You're just normal treading.
Amar Dehu. So when the Resh Galut heard this, they said, "Surba b'rabananu.
This guy must be a rabbi."
Therefore, shevkuhu, leave him alone.
So therefore, by giving him the halakha, they gave him some more respect.
Amar.
Oh, so that's the bottom line of this sugya. You see that the Gemara is saying could be it's only permissible when they're not chasing you. Then it's only permissible as you're walking. You don't have to go out of your way to sidestep, and you can actually just step on them themselves. Unless it's the five, if it's one of the five that we mentioned, then already even in their spot, we said what? You can kill them because they're very dangerous. And all the other animals will say if they're chasing you, so then already if they're dangerous, if they chase you, then already we said you can kill them. So there's different levels exactly of how far you can go. You have when they're chasing you, you have the five when they're in their spot, then you have all of them when they're not chasing you, you can just walk. The feet to law, and if you step on them, you step on them because it's really davar she'en mitkaven, but you're not going out of your way to step on them, you're walking anyway. So therefore, davar she'en mitkaven at worst is only isud rabbanan. In the case of these mazikim, the rabbis did not make the gezerah. And we conclude our Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar of Abba Barkan, Amar of Hanina, Pamotot shel bet rabbi utal tatalam b'shabbat. Those were the candelabras of the house of Rabbi. Mutar, they're permissible to move them on Shabbat. They are not mukseh. That's what the statement is. Okay, now obviously we learned earlier in the Masechet that if a candelabra is made out of components, which we call chuliot, it's forbidden to move them on Shabbat because they might fall apart. You might come to fix it. Obviously the candelabras in the Rabbi's house were one piece. They weren't made out of chuliot, of pieces. And therefore, they said they're not mukseh on Shabbat. Obviously we're talking where they're not lit. There's no fire in them, okay? So comes the Gemara and says, Amar le Rabbi Zira. So Rabbi Zira said, Benitalin biyado achat ubishtei yadayim. How big were these candelabras? Were they big where you can hold it with one hand, or did you need even two hands? Now, what was his question? Because if it's two hands, it's very heavy. And very heavy items like that, you don't move. Normally, the owner of them just leaves them in a certain spot. So therefore, they would be mukseh, because they're not usually handled. So he wanted to know, when you said the candelabras of the Rabbi's house are movable, which ones were you talking about? The ones you can move with one hand, or even the ones you can move with two hands? Amarek otan shel bet abicha. Say they told the Rabbi's not like the ones your father has in his house. Meaning that she says the small ones. Only the small ones are movable, but the big ones that she tells us, since a person designates a spot for them and doesn't move them, indeed they will be mukseh. Okay, now we give the second din. V'amar of Abba Barkana, Amar of Hanina. Kironot shel bet Rabbi. The wagons in the Rabbi's house. These wagons used to move people. So they say the wagons of bet Rabbi, muta l'taltelan b'shabbat. They're also not mukseh on Shabbat. Amar l'Rabbi Zira. So Rabbi Zira asked the same question. B'nitalin b'adam mehad o b'shne b'na adam. Which wagons? The big ones that can be carried only by two people? Or only the ones that can be carried by one person? They said again, the same thing. The ones like your father has, meaning the smaller ones. But the big ones obviously are not moved. Rabbi Abba Bar Kana, Lezdin, Hetir Lahem Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina gave a hetir, a leniency, Lebet Rabbi, for those that lived in the household of Rabbi, Lishtot Yayin, to drink wine, Bekeronot shel nochri, that were transported in the wagons of goyim bechotam echad, with one seal. Now normally we know that if a goy touches the wine of a Jew, so he makes the wine undrinkable. You cannot drink the wine unless the wine has a double seal on it. Okay, it's called the chotam betuch chotam. It's a double seal, because then we know already it was not tampered with. However, the Gemara says that Rav Abba Bar Kana said that there was a heter given by Rav Hanina for the family of Rabbi, that wine that was transported by a goy in their wagons, even if it only has one seal on it, they're allowed to drink it. So the Gemara says, "Ve'lo yadama imishum de sabada kerebi liyazir." I didn't know if the reason of this heter was he holds it going to be the Yazir. Who does the Bili Yazir say? The Bili Yazir holds that one seal is enough. And therefore, he was just taking that chita, or because since this was being brought to the president's house, Rabbi was the president of Klai, so he was the Nasi. So the goy that's bringing it, so could be he was afraid, and therefore he's not going to tamper with it. So for everybody else, you need two seals, but for Rabbi, one seal will be enough. That she says, Shaya nochriya mivyan yarem el Nasi. Why was he afraid of the Jewish Nasi? Sheyash shalit al pi ha-malchut. Meaning the king gave powers to the Jewish Nasi to enforce and give punishment. Therefore, mishum. So therefore, obviously, could be the goy was scared. Now, what purpose do we have to bring this story in our Gemara? So that she just says, mishum da'idi to be Abba Bakara le'el gabe nahash, nakat kol ani b'shmeh. Since already we discussed one statement of Rabbi regarding the snakes, so therefore we went now and brought all different stories of Pamotot, and then we brought the case of Keranot, and now we brought the story of the swine.